Song Travels explores the journey singers and songs take together. Support for Song Travels comes from NPR and NPR member stations.
Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein. My guests today are vocalist and songwriter Roseanne Cash and her husband and co-writer John Leventhal. She's the daughter of Johnny Cash and one of the preeminent artists of her day. She's recorded 11 number one singles, won a Grammy, and been nominated many times. Her 2009 album, The List, won the Americana Music Award for Best Album of the Year. John is a Grammy-winning producer, a world-class guitarist, and co-writer of all the songs on their new CD. This newest collaboration, The River and the Thread, features all original songs. Roseanne and John, welcome to Song Travels.
Thank you. It's our pleasure to be here.
I'm thrilled to be able to speak to both of you because I'm always interested in collaborations. And because you are life partners and also work together professionally, how does that affect both?
We're professional life partners. We make both the job. No, just kidding.
You know, being creative together and writing together and recording together and performing live together, I mean, some people would think it's just a little too much, and once in a while it does.
And so do we.
No, once in a while it does get to be, you know, if you're mad at someone and you have to go on stage with them, it's,
it can
be tough.
That never happens.
Never. But we've learned to avoid the pitfalls of that, and I love working with him. It's the ultimate romance to me.
And what came first, professional or personal?
It was kind of at the same moment. I mean, I was in love with him from the first second I saw him. And so I said, do you want to make a record with me? And we kind of got together while we were making that record. It was called The Wheel. And it was a really romantic, sweet time. And then we got married after The Wheel came out.
And when did you start writing songs together?
The first song we wrote together ended up on The Wheel. It was a song called Seventh Avenue. Mm-hmm. And I wrote the lyrics on a napkin at the Bottom Line. And I had just met John not long before that. We weren't a couple yet. And I gave him the lyrics and said, do you want to write this song with me? And he wrote it together and then recorded it on The Wheel.
On your newest collaboration, which is called The River and the Thread, you did co-write mm-hmm. everything on the on recording. Now, Rodney Crowell.
Well,
on,
we co-wrote all the songs, and Rodney and I had tried to write a song for Emmy Lou Harris, and Emmy passed on it. And Rose always loved the melody.
Well, Rodney and I improved on it together. I said, "Will you rewrite the song with me?" So Rodney was my first husband.
Right. So that what kind of relationship is that now?
Well, it's really good. We're friends, and he and John are friends as well. So it was the first time the three of us had collaborated on anything mm-hmm. since I left Rodney and was with John. And it was kind of a great moment, you know, full circle, real grown-ups working together. And we ended up loving the song. And it's a Civil War ballad, which was really unusual. I had never written a Civil War ballad.
And The River and the Thread is kind of a concept record about the South. It's kind of a bit of a Southern journey on a lot of levels. And so we were kind of on a mission. We took a lot of trips down South, down Highway 61. We drove from Memphis to New Orleans. We drove from Muscle Shoals, Alabama to Dyess, Arkansas. We went to Memphis a bunch of times. And we were really just, Roseanne was born in Memphis. So we were just really trying to soak it all in and see if we could write something that was moving and meaningful and resonant to us and hopefully to other people too.
Well, I'd like to get into some music. And you both have generously agreed to perform a number of songs from the new recording. And one that, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you to do to start off is Tell Heaven, and then I'd like to ask you about it after you do it.
Okay.
Here it is, Tell Heaven, Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal.
When you're like a broken bird, tell heaven. Battered wings against a darkened day. When your worries won't let you sleep, tell heaven. you got no one to love till heaven. No one on the telephone today. When every story falls apart, tell heaven. Nothing good seems like it'll come your way. Tell heaven. Tell heaven. Heavy hearts and empty rooms till heaven. You don't have to know what you will say. The empty sky may never take our burdens. Something good will someday come. Tell heaven, tell heaven.
That's a beautiful song, Tell Heaven. The line, the empty sky may never take our burdens, but something good will one day come our way.
Well, we wanted, when we were creating this album about the South, we thought, you know, if it's about the South, there should be a gospel song. Yeah. But neither one of us are particularly traditionally religious. We thought, well, there's got to be a gospel song for people who just long, whose hearts are open to something that's larger than themselves, and who want to put their burdens somewhere, even though they might not know who they're praying to or where the burdens are being lifted to. So we wrote Tell Heaven, and we thought, well, this is kind of a secular gospel song.
Well, I have a feeling that I'm in the same place spiritually as you are, and that I see spirit in everything, and feel that the universality of music is something that is so incredibly important and essential to our society today, because we have so few other things that bring us together. And listening to the recording, I feel that so much of it, even though you've created it as a Southern journey, it touches on so many aspects of the human condition that people are feeling today that make this about all of our lives. I know very little about the South, but there's not one thing on this recording that I can't relate to on a very personal level.
Well, thank you for saying that. That's incredibly gratifying to hear that from you. And, I mean, we did feel the same way, that even though geographically and kind of spiritually it's rooted in the South, that the stories are universal. Mm-hmm. Our feeling, too, is that the Delta, you don't really know who you are as an American until you know the music that came from the Delta, because it's so much a part of our DNA.
Right. And the music that came from a relatively small geographical place is really extraordinary. And it really informs so much of music of the 20th and 21st
amazing century.
I mean,
it is amazing.
In every conceivable way, right?
Yeah, that was life-changing for me, because I thought, how does this, what do I have to do with this? And then going down there, it's like, oh yeah, this is the bedrock of
the bedrock
of American
music.
The most, like Rose says, in our DNA, it just lurks in our, on a cellular level.
And then when you think about the Southern writers, I mean, we went to Faulkner's house, you know, while we were down there exploring the music, New Dora Welty. I mean, it's amazing what came out of that part of the country.
Well, your love for words and prose is something that has dovetailed very nicely into
your work as a songwriter. I mean, I know you didn't start out with the intention of being a songwriter, but it all seems sort of inevitable, doesn't it?
It does. I knew I wanted to be a writer, and I loved music so much, so eventually I said, well, I want to be a songwriter, but that's all I wanted to be. I never thought about being a performer. And, you know, you put one foot in front of the other, and then you're on stage.
Right. There's another song that I know relates to your family, mm-hmm. and it's called Sunken Lands. And when I started to read about the Sunken Lands, about geographically what happened in that place, how there was an earthquake in Arkansas in 1812, was it, or something like that,
yeah.
literally sunk the land, and that's where your family's from. Talk a little bit about that, please.
Well, my dad was born in Kingsland, Arkansas, and he grew up in Dyess, Arkansas, and they were desperately poor when he was born. And during the New Deal, FDR set up a colony of 500 houses, and he offered them to families who were really in need of a place to live. And the Cash family was chosen as one of these families. And the it was an area of Arkansas, as you said, called the Sunken Lands, near the New Madrid Fault, which in the early part of the 19th century, there had been a massive earthquake. The land sunk. The river, Mississippi River, flooded over it, which you would think would make the soil very rich and malleable. It is fertile, but it was called gumbo soil. It was so hard to till. So their lives were very, very hard, harder than we can imagine.
You are both involved in the restoration of the Johnny Cash house there?
Yes. In fact, that was kind of what kicked off our inspiration for this album, is that Arkansas State University bought my dad's boyhood home, and they wanted to restore it. So it's restored. The house is now restored, and they're now on to restoring the colony.
And what is the experience of being in that physical place? How does it affect your creativity? I mean, did you feel more connected to—
We felt it was inspirational in a strange way. It was kind of, for me, not being from there, being a New Yorker, in fact, there was a kind of haunted feeling to it. And this record started formulating, I think, in our heads when we were down there.
My heart really cracked open. You know, I had been there before. My dad took me there when I was 12 years old or something. But when the house was finally restored and the family went out there, I went in the room where my dad slept as a boy. There was nothing in there. And I just laid on the floor where his bed had been and thought, it was like time travel, thinking like, if he could have known at the age of 12 that his middle-aged daughter would come to this very spot, you know, what would that have meant? Mm-hmm. I really saw how hard the life was, how far he had to walk from that house to the administration building in the colony, what my grandmother had to do every day. You know, she lost a child, my dad's older brother, and the next day she had to be out in the cotton fields. Mm-hmm. It was survival, mm-hmm. really. And the Sunken Lands, the hero of the Sunken Lands, my song, mine and John's song, is my grandmother, Carrie Cash, who had an unbelievably difficult life, but was the most light-filled woman you can imagine.
How well did you know her?
Very well. She lived until I was 35.
So she had the blessing of seeing all the changes in the family and the lives and the fortunes and—
Yes.
Must have been so gratified and grateful.
There's a great story my dad tells, that my grandmother, they were very poor, but she heard his voice from singing in the fields when he was a young boy, right when his voice changed, maybe 13. Hmm. And so she took in extra laundry to make money to buy singing lessons for my dad. And she took him to the singing teacher, and the singing teacher brought him home and said, after a lesson, and said, this boy's got something special, and I don't want to mess it up, so you shouldn't bring him back.
How wonderful.
Isn't that great? That woman out in the country knew that.
Yeah, because she could have said, well, he can't sing properly.
Yes, exactly. You know?
I was afraid that's where the story was going.
No.
Actually, so I'm glad it was the other. What would you and John perform Sunken Lands?
Absolutely.
One, two, three.
Thank you.
5 cans of paint in the empty fields, and the dust reveals, and the children cry, the work never ends, there's not a single friend. Who will hold her hand in the sunken lands? The mud and tears melt the cotton bowls. It's a heavy toll, oh, and his words are cruel and they sting like fire, like the devil's choir, oh, who will hold her hand in the sunken lands?
That is Sunken Lands, performed by our guests, Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal. The thing about music that is so fascinating to me is how such unlikely sources sometimes come to be the inspiration for something else. And I know, Roseanne, people mistakenly think that you're a country gal, but actually you spent a good deal of your time in Los Angeles when you were growing up.
Mm.
And John, you're a New Yorker. So
yeah.
What is it that has, other than the obvious for you, Roseanne, what is it about the genre of country that attracts you?
Well, I mean, it certainly is in my cellular memory, you know, my father and the records that both my parents played around the house. And I didn't really care about it when I was young. You know, I was a huge Beatles fan, and so was John. That's one way we really connect. And when I was 18, my dad started re-educating me about country music. He was very ecumenical. He loved all kinds of music. Mm. But he felt by denying country music in my, you know, my repertoire of what I loved that I was really missing out on something. And he was right. Mm. You know, when I started reconnecting with these songs and just saw how tremendous the songwriting is. Wasn't is.
Yeah, maybe one of the last bastions of real storytelling
in
modern music.
That's right.
And John, where did it come from for you?
You know, it's funny, the whole idea of genres and that categorization of all this stuff, it kind of doesn't register in me. It never really did. It's like, I mean, you know, Charles Ives and George Gershwin and Miles Davis and Merle Haggard, it's all mm-hmm. on one continuum for me. I can't explain it. It's not in a box. It's in a continuum with me, with everything else. I love it all.
Hmm. The song Ode to Billy Joe, you've been performing that in your concerts.
Mm-hmm.
Why that song?
I was asked to participate in this project called The Rose and the Briar several years ago. It was a book about classic ballads. So they were doing a live show and they said, will you pick a ballad that you think is really exemplary of perfect storytelling ballad? And I chose Ode to Billy Joe. So once I did it live, it just fit my voice and I loved doing it. And we started doing it in our shows. And it's so cinematic, you know?
Boy.
It's like a photograph, a black and white photograph of the South. So there is that element in there of secrets and shame and not being able to get out of your circumstances to do something different than what everybody else has done.
It's also just an extraordinary lyric.
It is.
It's so mm-hmm. deep and so indirect. I mean, it's just so perfectly indirect. Like she never talks to or explains the story, but the story is just laid out in such an evocative way.
Would you perform it?
I'll try.
All right, well, here it is, the Ode to Billy Joe.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered out the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. She said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today, Bill and Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Then Papa said to Mama as he passed around the black-eyed peas, well, Billy Joe never had a lick of sense. Pass the biscuits, please. Oh, there's another 5 acres in the lower 40 I got to plow. And Mama said it was a shame about Billy Joe anyhow. Seems like nothing ever comes to no good up on Choctaw Ridge. And now Bill and Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Then Brother said he recollected when he and Tom and Billy Joe had put a frog down my back at the Carroll County Picture Show. And was it I talking to him after church last Sunday night? I'll have another piece of apple pie. You know, it don't seem right. I saw him at the sawmill yesterday up on Choctaw Ridge. And now Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Then Mama said to me, child, what's happened to your appetite? Well, I've been cooking all morning, you haven't touched a single bite. Oh, that nice young preacher, Brother Taylor, stopped by today. Hey, said he'd be pleased to have dinner on Sunday. Oh, by the way, he said he saw a girl looked a lot like you up on Choctaw Ridge. And she and Billy Joe was throwing something off the Tallahatchie Bridge. year is come and gone since we heard the news about Billy Joe. And brother married Becky Thompson, they bought a store in Tupelo. There was a virus going round, Papa caught it and he died last spring. And now Mama doesn't seem to want to do much of anything. And me, I spent a lot of time picking flowers up on Choctaw Ridge and drop them into the muddy water off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Ode to Billy Joe, performed by Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal on the guitar. An amazing song. There's another song that's on the recording, Etta's Tune, that is written out of real life or after some people who were very important to you.
This was the first song we wrote for the record, and it's about Marshall and Etta Grant. And Marshall was my dad's bass player in the original Tennessee Two. And after my dad died, he was like a surrogate dad to me, and he, you know, we'd talk regularly, and Marshall couldn't let go of the past, and he went over and over and over the old stories with me, you know, and in a way trying to fix them.
Were they always the same as he told them?
Yeah. It was like he wanted to fix it, you know. My dad was a drug addict during a lot of that time, and Marshall agonized about why he couldn't have gotten my dad off drugs, you know, like anyone can do that. And he saved everything, all of the relics of the past, the reel-to-reel tapes, the programs from the shows, everything. So Etta was his wife of 60-plus years, and Etta said to me, every morning of our lives when we woke up, we'd say, what's the temperature, darling?
And as soon as she told me that, I was like, dang.
That's a song.
There's our song, wow.
And they kept their house.
The house on Old Nokomis, which is a street in Memphis. So they kept that house, and that's where all of the souvenirs were kept.
Would you please sing Etta's tune?
Yes, we will.
Here it is.
One, two, three. What's the temperature, dog? 100 or more. Horses pawing at the dust, violets wilting by the door. But you pour your strongest coffee and I'll take the battered wheel. We'll drive straight down the river road, spread a blanket on the hill. What's the temperature, darling? Now don't stare into the past. There was nothing we could change or fix. It was never gonna last. Now don't stare into those photos. Don't analyze my eyes. We're just a mile or two from Memphis and the rhythm of our lives. A mile or two from Memphis, and I must go away. I tore up all the highways, there's nothing left to say. A mile or two from Memphis, and I finally made it home. There were days you paced the kitchen, that what I'd said felt like jail. When the phone rang in the dead of night, you would always throw my bail. But no, you never touched the whiskey, and you never took the pills. I traveled for 1,000,000 miles while you were standing still. What's the temperature, darling, as the daylight fades away? I'll make one last rehearsal with one foot in the grave. We kept the house on old Nokomis. We kept the polished bass guitar. We kept the tickets and the reels of tape to remember who we are. A mile or two from Memphis, and I must go away. I tore up all the highways, there's nothing left to say. A mile or two from Memphis, and I finally made it home. What's the temperature, darling?
Etta's tune, A Mile or Two from Memphis and I Finally Made It Home. What happened to all of the memorabilia?
She still has it. He passed away in 2011, and I talk to her regularly, and she's thinking, says, you know, I'm thinking about moving back to Nokomis.
Really?
Yeah.
And how old is she?
She's in her late 80s.
An amazing song. There's more coming up in a moment with John Leventhal and Roseanne Cash. I'm Michael Feinstein, and this is Song Travels from NPR Music. I'd like to go back a little bit to the earlier years of your career, because as you said, you didn't intend to be a performer, but you not only became a performer, but you had quite an extraordinary number of hit records.
Yeah.
And someone I knew who had seen you early on said that you didn't look comfortable performing on stage, that you seemed like you didn't want to be there.
I didn't. When I was young and I had these hit records and the record label and everybody expected you to go on the road and perform it and everything, I was not ready. And I always had this feeling that I didn't require that much attention, that I shouldn't be on stage to get that much attention because I was happy not being on stage. So why would you do it? I had a very different understanding of live performance than I do now. It's changed over the years, obviously. I mean, I am comfortable performing, and I see it much more as energy exchange and something you create in the moment, and then it's gone, you know. And I love that temporal nature of performance, and I love the unique chemistry that happens with an audience every night, and I love letting music go through us and just seeing what happens. I know you know what I'm talking about because I've seen you perform. But early on, you're right, I didn't want to be a performer. And also, my dad was a great performer. And I thought, well, if you're not going to be the best, then why should you do it? But that's a very debilitating way to look at your life.
Mm-hmm. Liza Minnelli, still, whenever I'm with her socially, people almost inevitably say, oh, I loved your mother. I loved your mother.
Oh, yeah, I get that every day of my life.
And she loved her mother. But sometimes people don't even see her.
Honey, you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
I get people who want to try to look through me to see my father. yeah. or to touch me, to vicariously touch my father. You know, there's been times I've come off stage. As I walk off stage and somebody said, I saw your dad play in 1973.
And, of course, you have to say thank you.
Thank you. Oh, I hope you enjoyed it more than you enjoyed tonight anyway.
Well, would you perform a very significant hit from your early career, 7 Year Ache?
Sure.
All right, here it is.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
You act like you were just born tonight, face down in a memory, feeling all right. 'Cause who does your past belong to today? Baby, you don't say nothing when you're feeling this way. The girls in the bar singing, who is this guy? They don't think nothing when they're telling you lies. You look so careless when they're shooting that bull. But you know heartaches are heroes when their pockets are full. Just tell me you're trying to kill the 7 year ache and see what else your old heart can take. Boys say, when is he gonna give us some room? The girls say, God, I hope he comes back soon. Still uptown on your downhill swing. The boulevard's empty, why don't you come around? Baby, what is so great about sleeping downtown? There's plenty of dives to be someone you're not. Say you're looking for something you might have forgot. Don't bother calling to say you're leaving alone. There's a fool on every corner when you're trying to get home. Tell her you're trying to kill the 7 year ache and see what else your old heart can take. Boys say, when is he gonna give us some room? The girls say, God, I hope he comes back soon. Just tell me you're trying to kill the 7 year ache and see what else your old heart can take. Boys say, when is he gonna give us some room? Say, God, I hope he comes back soon.
Seven-Year Ache, performed by Roseanne Cash with John Leventhal. Getting back to The River and the Thread, there is a track on the recording, When the Master Calls, that is very compelling to me because in my own evolution, I have learned more and more that I really don't have any control over my life. Mm. And it's not up to me. I mean, I do struggle back and forth about how much control we do have over our lives. Mm. I mean, how much is free will and how much is determined. That song sort of reminds me of that, When the Master Calls, that there is that duality we go through in our lives about surrender.
Yeah, that song works on a lot of levels for me. And, you know, on the most obvious level, it's a Civil War ballad. And I love Celtic ballads and Appalachian ballads, and so does John. And we really wanted to write something in that tradition where it was a story song. There's a heartbreak at the end, you know, that it's very visual. And I actually had Civil War ancestors who fought on both sides of the war. I had Confederate ancestors and Union ancestors.
And do you know, after the war, with what happened?
What happened to some of them? Yeah, some of them were killed in the war and some survived. Well, I went on the Civil War database when we were thinking about writing this song as a Civil War ballad. And there were six photos on the Civil War database, and one of them was William Cash, my ancestor, who was a Union soldier. And I mean, you can imagine, I just got chills. I couldn't believe it. And he was standing there with his sash on, and he was a bugler. He survived the war and went into the Navy. So I looked in my ancestry, and I found a woman, Cash, who would have been 20, 21, 22 in the Civil War, and who never married, never remarried. Huh. And I found Marianne Cash. So I put them together in the song.
Oh.
Yeah. But what you just said about destiny, fate, how much you can control, that's always been a question that fascinated me too. And then at the very end of the song, he says to Virginia, where he comes from, he said, "I'll see you when I'm younger."
Yeah. Yeah, that's the line that gets me.
Yeah.
Because that turns everything upside down.
Turns everything upside down.
Well, let's listen to it, "When the Master Calls."
Girl with hair of flaming red, seeking perfect lover, for to lie down on her feather bed, soft secrets to uncover. Must be gentle, must be strong, with disposition sunny, just as faithful as the day is long, and careful with his money. And so the open letter read, the newsboy did deliver. 3 months later, plans were made to wed down by the King James River. Lo, the season may come. Lo, the season may go. What love is joined together will forever calls the roll. Oh, my darling William Lee, take me to the altar. I don't have tides demand that I leave you with your mother, with my father's rifle in one hand and your locket in the other. Lo, the season may come. Lo, the season may go. Can this union be preserved? The soldier boy was crying. I will never travel back to her, but not for lack of trying. It's the love of one true-hearted lass that made the boy a hero. But a rifle ball and a cannon blast cut him down to zero. Oh, Virginia, whence I came, I'll see you when I'm younger. And I'll know you by your hills again, this time from 6 feet under. Low the season may come, low the season may go. One man is torn asunder, will someday be made whole. When the master calls the roll, though the storm clouds gather, let the union be made whole. When the master calls the roll.
When the master calls from the river and the thread, Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal's new CD. Who are some of the people that sing on that track?
Wow, we have quite a choir.
Yeah, it was really quite an experience. I'll just come out and tell you who it is. We have John Prine, also incredibly gifted songwriter. Chris Christopherson, can't say enough about him. Tony Joe White, who's one of my favorites. Rodney Crowell, who wrote the song with us, and Amy Helm, who's Levon Helm's daughter, who's also a great singer. It's really quite a masterful.
We call it the Master's Choir.
The Master's Choir. Yeah, it was hurting cats a little bit to get, hurting big cats, I should say, to get them all kind of on the same place at the same time. But we did it, and it was quite an experience. I just up two mics and said, let's do it. Here we go.
Great. Yeah. Yes, because the true acoustic sound of that, without overdubbing people later, there's a big difference because people just feel it. They just feel it. The song 50,000 Watts, which is, again, a new creation for your CD, The River and the Thread. Tell me about that, please.
Well, I had wanted to write a song about music being a common prayer to all of us. And, you know, music is religion to me, music and art. And children. And there's a radio station in Memphis called WDIA, and their sign, you know, advertising them says 50,000 watts of goodwill. And I was at the same time having the idea of writing about common prayer. And so I said, wow, 50,000 watts of common prayer. It's kind of perfect.
Yeah. WDIA is kind of a famous Southern radio station, first station in the South that really was broadcast just for a Black audience. And B.B. King was a DJ, Rufus Thomas was the DJ, and Memphis being the most incredible melting pot of musical styles, probably more than any other city in some ways, like Elvis, Roseanne's dad, all these guys were listening to the station when they were growing up. It had a pretty large impact for a large variety of musicians from that area.
Well, let's listen to your tribute to it, 50,000 watts.
One, two, three, on. It's a hard road, but it fits your shoes. Son of rhythm, brother of the blues. The sound of darkness, the pull of the yoke. Now everything is broken.
and painted in smoke. But there's a light on Sunday, a new old desire. The sound of the whistle crawls radio wires. Love in your future, I'll wait for you there with 50,000 watts of a common prayer. 50,000 watts of a common prayer. We'll be who we are and not who we were. A sister to him, a brother to her. We'll live like kings without any sin. Redemption will come, just tune it on in. There's a light on Sunday, a new old desire. The sound of the whistle crawls the radio wires. Love in your future, I'll wait for you there with 50,000 watts of a common prayer. 50,000 watts of a common prayer. Fifty thousand watts of a common prayer. Fifty thousand watts of a common prayer.
That's 50,000 watts of common prayer from The River and the Thread. Before we end our program, I would love to have the opportunity, Roseanne, of singing something with you.
It would be my honor.
Well, I heard you sing a song from My Fair Lady, and I was so delighted to hear you do a very different take on the song.
I remember you were there that night, and I was so nervous to do that song in front of you.
Oh.
It was. But the fact you want to do it with me now, thank you.
Well, it's truly my honor. Let's give it a go.
Okay, this is from My Fair Lady.
Wouldn't it be lovely?
Lots of coal making lots of heat. Warm face, warm hands, warm feet. Oh, wouldn't it be lovely? Resting on my knee,
as he can be, who takes good care of me. Oh, wouldn't it be lovely, lovely, lovely.
That was a joy to harmonize with you at the end. Is just a thrill.
I'll never forget it. Thank you.
Nor I. I'd like to thank both of you for sharing your wisdom, your humanity, and of course your talent on our program. I wish you much success with The River and the Thread. It's an eloquent expression of our times.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
All the best, and thank you.
You've been listening to Song Travels with host Michael Feinstein and his guests Roseanne Cash and John Leventhal. Song Travels is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio and is recorded at Hirsch Studios in New York City, with post-production in the Elaine T. Freeman Suite at ETV Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Andrew Shire, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Grant Jackson, production assistant Laura Hunsberger. The executive producer is Kobe Hennessy. The executive in charge is Linda O'Brien. Special thanks to Anya Grundman, director and executive producer of NPR Music. We love to hear from you. Our email address is songtravels@scetv.org. Our postal address is ETV Radio, 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for Song Travels comes from NPR and NPR member stations. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org. This is NPR.